Hey, what's going on, my friends? This is Alex Pardo here, and we are delivering episode 444 on the Flip Empire Show.
Welcome to the Flip Empire Show, bringing you the interviews, strategies, and insights for smart real estate investors. Prepare to dive into the minds of real estate's heavy hitters and gain the cutting-edge expertise you need to scale and grow your real estate empire. Your success and freedom starts now with your host, Alex Pardo.
Before we dive into today's masterclass expert interview, I want to let you know that this show is sponsored by Ascend, our in-house assembly of success-minded people, business owners, and entrepreneurs actively collaborating together to ascend our businesses to new heights while also experiencing truly happier, more fulfilling lives at the same time. We believe it's not an either-or, but you can truly have both and. It's the unique and rare combination of mastermind coaching and community that makes Ascend so special. But it's definitely not for everyone. If you're an entrepreneur who's looking for more than your typical mastermind or coaching, and you think these things can help you accelerate your ascension from where you are today to where you want to go while living a more meaningful and rewarding life in the process, then you can head over to ascendyoursuccess.com, click the application button, and we'll go from there. All right, guys. So here we go. On this particular masterclass, what I have decided to do was a little while ago, Steve Cavanaugh and I, we interviewed one of our just rock star Ascend members, Brenton Hess, who is 27 years old. He's got about 40 rental units. He's on pace to do over 20 flips this year. And the kid is just an absolute stud in every way. Got involved in this business at 19. So he's been in doing this 7-8 years now. And we talk about some very specific things like how he's currently raising capital. He shares like step one, step two, step three, like very practical ways for you to raise capital in this environment. He talks about how he's actually one interesting, very easy to implement free strategy to get more deals from wholesalers. Steve and I also piggyback and share a few other outside the box ways that you guys can connect on more deals working with wholesalers. And we also talk about, you know, he's quickly built up a rental portfolio of 40 units and why bigger isn't always better and what he's actually doing to correct that problem. And then Brenton has had some losses along the way, and he shares his biggest failure and lesson learned in that. So a lot to take away from this podcast. So we are going to dive right into this one. All right, fellas, I believe we are now live. What's going on, guys?
What's up, man?
What's up?
I love how Steve, when we go live, Steve like gets up, he gets into state. It's a different like, yeah, there he is.
Right, baby. I'm going to start doing some jumping jacks here. We'll do like all the way to 10. Here we go.
And then we're taking this to a Tony Robbins Zoom live event now. So.
That's right.
That's awesome. Brenton, what's going on, brother? How are you?
I'm excited to be here. How are you guys?
Always good to see you, man. You always got a smile on your face, dude.
Well, it's not something I get every day, so I'll take the compliment.
There you go. Cab, what's going on in your world, man?
Chilling, brother, chilling. Just got back into town from South Carolina yesterday, looking at another self-storage facility. That is number 3 under contract in the past couple of months, so...
Amazing, man. Well, last time we did a live, you and I, and we were interviewing someone else, I had a lot of people reach out to me about storage because we kind of briefly touched on it. Mm-hmm. Anything, I know you're under contract here, so you probably can't get into too many details, but anything you can share, because storage is something a lot of people have interest in. So before we put Brenton on the hot seat here, anything you can share with us about storage and kind of your journey up to this point?
Man, that's an open-ended question. And we're here to interview Brenton, not me, but I'll tell you that it's very intriguing. It's a pretty awesome business model. And, I think done right, it can generate a lot of wealth and not be a ton of work. So
yep,
I'll leave it at that.
I love
How about leaving the intrigue wide open?
There you go. Brenton, what is up, man? So this is your, you've been on the podcast before, and now we're doing this. This will probably get published on the Flip Empire Show, but Steve and I wanted to connect with you. Obviously, Steve has been coaching you now for well over a year. And brother, you have a very interesting, unique story. 27 years old, 40 rental units. You're on track to do roughly 20 or more flips this year. You also have a very, very successful coaching program. You have a lot of people coming to you for coaching. So, man, where do we begin? There's a lot of places we can take this, but why don't we kind of start with, let's give people a little bit of background here. 27 years old, you got started in real estate around what time?
I was 19.
Okay. And how did you get your start?
Well, all right. So when I was going to college, I was 19 on winter break. And I guess I'll take you back. I'll take you back a little bit more than that. When I was 12, my parents opened up a Keller Williams franchise back when it was Keller Who. Nobody really knew about Keller Williams. They weren't that big. And it was right before 2008, 2006. So they opened up a Keller Williams franchise, and I was kind of born and raised in real estate. And they, my mother's been the CEO since day one. My father's been the broker, and they've been owners. So because of that, I was already automatically intrigued. However, I was working at National Security Agency, and I had a security clearance and W-2 and all that good stuff while going to college. And to them, it was the good life because it was steady income and they have the roller coaster ride that we're all on, which is real estate. And I had the job security and all that good stuff. So I was going down that route. And then when I was 19, I just wanted to get my real estate license. I knew it was going to be just 60 hours of class time. And everybody else around had that. So I went ahead and got my real estate license. And I went to my parents and said, like, what would you do if, you know, first of all, what is real estate? How do you do this? Because the real estate license doesn't teach you anything. Mm-hmm. And they're like, well, it depends. What do you want to do? And it a lot of different routes to go. And I said, well, what would you do if you were me? And they basically said, we'd do what we never did, which was invest in real estate. And I said, okay, well, how do you do that? And they're like, I don't know. We are focused on the brokerage and our agents and selling real estate. So we don't know. So I say all that to point out like a tale of two stories, mm-hmm. raised in real estate and also like carving the own path and figuring out and making mistakes as I go. So that is how I got started at 19. And then I found somebody in our real estate office who had a lot of money, not a lot of time. And I had a lot of time, not a lot of money. In fact, I had college debt. And I brought in a friend and we started flipping some houses together and learning through the school of hard knocks, kind of the blind leading the blind, making plenty of mistakes. And I was doing that throughout college and then eventually went on my own and then started doing the rentals and flips, rentals, some property. We self-manage our own units. And
okay.
I have a partner on most of my rentals, a good friend of mine named Austin Carroll. And then other than that, I'm flipping on my own. And then now I've adopted Steve's coaching model on helping somebody through their first three flips and being there every step of the way from starting their business to being a successful investor and letting them go off on their own. So that has been a fun niche for a little bit more passion, income, and getting more experience. So that's the story to where we are today.
I love it. Cab, you got any? Follow-up for Ben?
Yeah. Yeah, Brenton. So, all right. So, man, you're a young guy. You know, obviously, you kind of come from a little bit of a real estate background, your parents and everything like that. I'm sure you get this all the time. I know you have a lot of people approaching you about coaching. I know you have a very robust coaching program there. But to the folks who are your age, maybe younger, I know you spend a lot of time kind of mentoring young folks coming into the business. What's like one big piece of advice that you give somebody who's on the fence? You know, there's so many people that want to leave the job that they have. There's so many people that look up to you and see the business that you built and everything. What's like the one piece of advice that you give them when they come to you with that conundrum?
About leaving their job?
Yeah. Making that transition. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I know that everybody's situation is going to be different, how much time they have, how much money they have, resources, savings, what their cost of living is. So what I do is I just simply share like what worked for me / what I would do differently, knowing what I know, and then allow them to pick and choose how that might help them with where they are. And what I usually will say is, listen, I've been there. I know exactly what it's like. I have that itch, that craving, and therefore – there's no better time, especially with how competitive the market is today in real estate. There's no better time to do both, to keep your steady income and to prove the concept, prove that you love it, prove that it's for you, prove that you can make money and build your systems and use the money maybe from your full-time job to hire somebody like me or somebody else for to coach you and show you the way, or to go buy a course, or you can even find all the information out there for free if you want to put in the effort and time and you have the self-discipline, and you will go through the school of hard knocks like all of us. But I really firmly believe you can. Most people, myself included, I was doing both. And until I felt comfortable enough to leave one to go to the other. And I still believe that I left a little early. I jumped a little bit too antsy in hindsight, because I think that I could have really milked having my W-2 and leveraging that income and done a little bit more in real estate. But also, you just deal with your own decision. So make your bed, you sleep in it. And that's what I did.
Yeah. Yeah. Sure. And I've heard there's different schools of thought, right? Some people come from the mentality of, hey, burn the ships and that's how you're going to succeed. Go all in. I tend to take a little bit of a more cautious approach, is, you know, make sure that you got, you know, food on the table and you're taking care of your family responsibilities. But that's going to require you to go above and beyond and sacrifice nights and weekends to get your business off the ground. I see so many people talking about wanting success, but just not willing to put in the time and the action. Right. So obviously that, you know, you did it the right way, I think. I want to touch on something you said, Brent, earlier. You said you found somebody that had money and not time. You had the time. Can you talk a little bit about the importance of, like, understanding what resources, what assets people bring to the table, whether it's time, whether it's money, whether it's knowledge or any number of other, like, assets, because sometimes people just have a hard time understanding what they bring to the table and what others have, and then figuring out how to connect with the right people.
Perfect example is if somebody just messaged me today and said, hey, I want to learn more about real estate investing. I'm not ready to dump money into it, whether that means marketing or coaching or whatever. However, I would love to spend my time that I have in addition to whatever else I'm doing and helping you. I would be able to put them to work right away. I'd get them, depending on their personality styles and how green they are. I mean, I would figure out a position for them. And not that I have any big organization or anything, but there's still plenty to do. I mean, whether it means dropping signs in our target neighborhoods that we buy houses that are cheap, or sending out the texts or making calls to our old leads that we're not servicing, there's plenty for people to do if they have the time and they want to learn and surround themselves with the right people and maybe gain some confidence. So for those reasons, there's always opportunity out there, whether it's myself, you guys, or anybody else who would take somebody else's time if they're a good person willing to work hard. And I didn't know what I was doing. I really just found myself in a pretty unique situation. And if I can go back in time, I probably wouldn't do what I did. I wouldn't have started a company like an LLC and ownership and operating agreement and use somebody else's money, because it ended up being a crutch for me. I didn't learn how to leverage and raise capital and use other people's money. And then eventually that partnership ends, and thankfully it didn't ruin the relationship, but it could. So that's why I really like the coaching model that Steve has that I adopted, which is like clean. It's like just joint venture partner, first three flips, your company, your LLC, you do it on your own. I definitely think that that's the philosophy of leveraging, using your time to get in the game with somebody else who's maybe lacking time or has something for you to do is a credible strategy anybody could implement like immediately.
Yeah. Yeah. And Cav, I think strategic partners is something that people should really lean heavily into, especially now where there's so much uncertainty. And I've seen, and I've talked to so many investors that have really scaled back on their marketing. They're a little bit gun shy to spend money and strategic partners, when it's with the right partner, where there's a core value alignment, they bring something to the table, you bring something to the table. I know obviously you've done a ton of strategic partnerships. That could be critical to one's success, especially during this environment.
Yeah. I think, let me piggyback on that, Alex. I mean, I think, you know, one of the things that both of you guys are talking about is just like making sure that you're aligned with the right groups right now. I mean, you know, I think a lot of communication, right or wrong, has really, especially like over, it seems like the past month and a half or so, has kind of gone private. And I think a lot of people are strategizing in the smaller groups. You know, this is not to plug Ascend or any other group out there, but right now, probably more than any other time in recent history, is the time to really plug into a private group that's able to kind of advise each other and really share with each other what is going on. So, yeah. Brendan, I want to ask you a question, man, about coaching before we move on, because I know that you have just taken the coaching model that I shared with you, and you've just taken it and run with it, and you've just kind of been one of the banner guys out there who was just absolutely rocking with this model. Would you mind answering two questions for us? Maybe you can tell us two stories that'll make it kind of fun. But number one, what's a story about like your biggest coaching win? So maybe a student that's just done a great deal or something along those lines. And then number two, I'd love you to tell us a story about your biggest win as a student or a member in another coaching group, whether that's Ascend or an earlier mentorship for you.
Yeah, absolutely. And I have more horror stories than I have wins. They stick. And that's where we learn from. However, for the wins, I would say starting with for wins, one of my favorite stories that I like to highlight as far as like the coaching side for my group is I have somebody who I went to school with growing up, and he's like, I've been following you. I always want to jump in. It looks like you actually have something for me to jump into. I have a W-2 full-time job, and you know I can pay you, so I want to jump in. So he was one of my first early adopters, and he came completely green. He wasn't on BiggerPockets. He wasn't really consuming all the content.
Yeah.
And Steve said it perfectly to me when I was going through the boot camp on the coaching model, and that is they buy into your confidence. And a lot of them they're buying your resources, they're buying your time, and they're also buying your confidence. And he ended up during his first month, he was raising private capital. He's talking with friends and family about where their resources are now and who else they know who's investing. And in his first month, he's having a conversation about capital, ends up talking to a family member who knew somebody else who had a house that they just wanted to sell. So they weren't like, oh, I have capital for you, but I might have a house for you. And in his first like 90 days, like we ended up wholesaling, like we do flips, and that just didn't make sense for us to flip, but we weren't going to let it go. And we ended up making money together, and he ended up taking that money and reinvesting into marketing to find those next deals. So he was leading with revenue off the bat, whether it's paying me, it's paying for marketing. And I was super proud of him because he said he would have never been having those conversations had we not teed up the scripts and pushed them into action. So that was a pretty nice win, because I think it's hard to relate to the stories of somebody goes out and finds a flip, makes $50,000, $70,000, $80,000, but it's easy for somebody to relate to somebody who just comes across brand new, green, finds a deal that we weren't expecting, makes a few bucks, leads with revenue, and then starts small and gets the next one. So pretty great, relatable story, and I give him all the credit in the world.
Yeah, sure. That's incredible, man. Brother, I want to ask you a quick question about the fact that, you know, you started off fixing and flipping. You talked about how you didn't know what you were doing, but yet you kind of figured it out. And then you adopted Steve's coaching model when you started coaching people. What was the balance for you, Britton, as far as like running a successful fix and flip business and then launching a whole nother business, which even though it was parallel, right? It's a coaching business. It requires different activity than it does to go, you know, find deals. Talk a little bit about that, because I see so many people that, you know, they're in real estate, but they want to go out and create a product, or they want to be an influencer, or they want to do this or that.
Sure. Yeah. And that actually is a great segue into part two of Steve's question is like, out of all the training and coaching and all that I've had, what really stands out? What would be a win from that is really it's this model. It's kind of a combination of when I hired Steve directly as a coach for the blueprint for the coaching model, combined with being here with you guys in Ascend. And I know this isn't how it's teed up and why we're doing the live, but it truly is surrounding yourself with people who is doing a lot of the same activities, whether that is the coaching or the investing at that type of level, or just having a personal life that resembles where you want to be or where you are. So I really definitely appreciated having some sort of structure to go off of, because I'm a shiny object kind of guy. And thanks to you guys, I've been doing more addition by subtraction. So less shiny objects gives me way more in life, money, time, all that good stuff.
Hey, look, can I piggyback on that real quick, Brenton? And then I promise we can move on from this topic. But I think it would be really interesting for everybody out there to hear what type of personal, because you mentioned personal things there. What type of personal breakthrough has kind of been the biggest personal breakthrough for you as a result of being coach, as a result of being in a mastermind that's private and tightly knit like this? What's been the biggest personal breakthrough for you?
Just having, so Mackenzie, my fiance, we're set to get married in October, having her be able to be involved in something is a big win for us personally, because when, if I'm like going away for 3 days at a mastermind and I come back and I'm like, oh, and Alex said this and Steve said this and she doesn't know these people or who they are. I mean, it just seems like I'm just at a getaway and I'm having a great time and growing, and yet she now has a lot more context. So then when I come back and I'm not, and I came back from one of ours and I was like, I want to sell all of my rentals, all of them. And she was like, oh, there she is. And she's like,
cool.
Instead of her going like, what do you mean you want to just sell everything? Like, what did they feed you? What'd you drink down there? She was actually a part of the discovery process of, okay, we're figuring out life. We're making changes. We're doing things we otherwise wouldn't do because of the conversations in that room. So I would say like that is, there's nothing better to me than having us on the same page, at least for some stuff. More stuff than we would have been. But to Alex, to put a bow on the conversation about shiny objects and coaching and doing, building multiple things at once and all that good stuff. I can say that I've been forced to become a much better investor myself when I'm leading others. And I didn't realize how difficult it would be to take myself back to like, okay, if I knew nothing or very little, how do I successfully like flip 3 houses? I was kind of estimating rehab costs based on walking through and saying, okay, I had like this exact house 2 years ago. It cost about this much. Here's a couple changes. So like I'd walk through, estimate a rehab based off of just prior knowledge. I don't have that prior knowledge. So like I was forced to sit down and build a rehab estimator that line by line taught pricing and you measure square footage. And I know that stuff is out there. And I had to make one that made sense to me in my head with my pricing and that they could help, that'll help them. Yep. So I'm forced to slow down and like build good systems, finishes lists, exactly what items we want for finishes so that I don't run the risk of a coaching client picking out something that I don't think looks good at all. Or they let the worse, they do what I used to do, which is let the contractors pick out the finishes. So all of this stuff really forces us into, being better. And I would say that's been such a great advantage. Flash, it has taken a lot more time than I expected. And that's kind of why I've kind of put the pause. I'm like, all right, the coaching clients are doing a lot of deals right now. We have a lot of deals. So
I love it. I love it.
We got to figure it out before we get too big.
Well, Brenton, before we transition, I want to ask you some X's and O's as far as how you're finding high profit deals and some strategies from working with wholesalers. And I want to kind of give people some actionable, like just step-by-step X's and O's as far as your real estate investing business. Before we do that, shout out. What's up, George?
George, what's happening, man?
Fellow ascender in the house. So look forward to seeing you guys at our mastermind retreat in about a month in Miami. Guys, if you have any questions, we'd love to answer any questions. We want to make this interactive. So if you have anything at all for myself, for Brenton, or for Steve, just fire away. But Brent, how are you finding most of your fix and flip opportunities these days?
You mentioned the wholesalers, and you being one, I believe that it'd be fun to get your context on this strategy. But here's one of the things that I've done that seems to have worked quite well. And I used to go far and wide before I went deep. So I used to get on hundreds and hundreds of, well, I still am hundreds and hundreds of wholesaler lists. So I'm getting the email blasts and I'm not actually sorting through them. So that wasn't doing me any good. So what I did was I identified like 20 relationships that I've had that I respect of people that are wholesalers in my market. And I have it on my calendar every Monday. I'm going to reach out to these 20 individuals and have a personal conversation about how are they, what's going on in their life, what they're seeing, how I might help them, and what they have coming up in the pipeline. And it served me fairly well. I've gotten some really good flips out of that. And I'll tell you why. Because number one, it's forcing me to do something every single week consistently. And in this case, it's building a relationship. It's instead of going 100 feet wide, it's going 100 feet deep with these 20 individuals. And not only that, it's having a direct conversation about how you can help them and also what they have in their pipeline. So my favorite is when somebody like a wholesaler says, well, I actually have an appointment coming up this week. Here are the details. Let me know what you would buy it for. And now I already feel like I'm first in line if they can lock this up, and I've already given them my price.
Yeah.
And I've also gotten lucky. So one conversation I had with a guy was like, hey, what do you got in the pipeline? How are things? And he goes, hey, you know that one property that you submitted an offer on a couple weeks ago that I ended up selling to somebody else? I was like, yeah. And he goes, well, that buyer didn't perform.
You don't say.
You mean that actually happens?
And I would have never followed up with him ever on an offer because I'm not that organized, even though I should be. And yet by having this weekly routine and rhythm, we were just having conversation. And he goes, you want to take another crack at it? I'm like, yeah. So anyways, I ended up getting that locked up under contract, and that's one of my flips now. Mm-hmm. So it has worked really well. So Alex, from your perspective, from a wholesaler's perspective, if you have an investor who's texting you every week, who's not just like, hey, you know, like, what do you got for me? What do you got for me? It's more of like, how are things? You know, how can I help you? What do you got in the pipeline type of conversation? How might that help from your perspective, a wholesaler?
That it's everything. They're top of mind. They're at the top of the list. Anytime I get something or we get something, they're the first person we think of. So much so that I'm kind of surprised. I've been doing this 15 years and I can count on one hand the people that have actually taken the time to do that, where they've been consistent. And so if you're listening to this and you're watching this, let that be a light bulb moment for you that Brenton is sharing. He's committed to be consistent with reaching out to X amount of wholesalers who he wants to build the relationship with. And I can almost but guarantee you that 99.8% of people out there are not willing to do that. So I can't remember the last time I had a fix and flip investor just consistently reach out to A, see how we're doing and just build the relationship, and B, ask, hey, what do we have? Because if they did, they would be top of mind for us.
And I'll throw out there also, guys, like this can go beyond just buying from wholesalers. I mean, this is like business in general. This is life in general. I even go so far as to say, I mean, I know you guys are fellow believers. I mean, you know, when you pray for those folks, and sometimes it'll just come to me in the morning, I'll say, hey, oh man, hey, you know, so-and-so, hey, look, I was just thinking about you this morning. You know, I just want to let you know, man, you know, if you ever need to talk or if you got anything going on, just hit me up. And, you know, man, I can't tell you how many times that has panned out for me and has been resulted in a fruitful business relationship, but really didn't have that intention in the first place. Just wanted to simply reach out and just say, hey, I'm thinking about you this morning. Yep. So good stuff.
Yeah. And something else practical to add, and I hope some people take me up on this, but if you just find out, if you figure out who the top wholesalers are in your market, find out when their birthday is. And when it's their birthday, record a 15 to 20 second video. You know, Steve is laughing because I love doing these. Record a video and send it to them and just say, hey, I'm thinking about you. Wanted to send you a happy birthday. Always here for you if you need me. And be genuine about it, obviously. And that's the type of stuff that kind of cuts the clutter, you know? So there's little things like that you can do. You know, what was that?
I'm actually laughing because, Brenton, did you know Alex's birthday is in 2 days? I'm sorry. Yeah, 2 days. 2 days. 2 days.
Brenton, how old do you think I'm turning? Guess. You got one crack at it.
Let me just say first, that plug was conveniently timed for your birthday. We know you're.
Man, I'm not starving for attention here, but okay, I'll take it.
All right. I have no idea how old you are, so this will be fun. I'm going to guess.
Is it coming out right? Is it coming out? I can't even.
Don't give him any.
Yeah, I was going to be 36. Are you 40?
I'm turning 40, brother. Turning 40. Look, this guy's a puppy over here. 27. I'm turning 40, man. Crazy.
Well,
Steve over here is rounding 50, so I don't feel that bad.
No, but I will tell you this, man. As soon as you turn 40, dude, you're going to watch the gray hairs on your head multiply, my friend. It's like, there's something about it, yeah.
I believe it.
He's going to need the Theracane that you use, Steve.
The Theracane. I was going to break that out, Brent. It's around here somewhere.
You sure?
I have it at my office. I would totally break it out right now.
Alex doesn't need the Theracane, Brenton. He's got the gun.
Oh,
the Theragun.
I don't have it here. I have the Hypervolt. That thing is the best $350 I've ever spent money on. Yeah, it's amazing. It's amazing. all right, let's get back to the content here. When did you commit to be consistent with this approach, and how many deals has it landed you so far?
Yeah, for this exact approach, I want to say it was sometime around the new year. It was like one of those things, like, all right, it's the new year. I got to do something better. I got to do something different. And that's what I chose. I really said, instead of going far and wide in my relationships, I'm going to go deep. And I didn't realize it would pan out to success like so quickly.
Yep.
And even now that COVID hit, it's even more imperative to know who's doing the deals, who's got the right systems, who is able to actually get sellers to the closing table during these times. And they're really all that you're getting for deals. Like, I've seen the email deal flow just shrink to like 10% of the type of deals that I was getting blasted in a given week. So that's one way to reverse engineer who's doing the deals, is get on all those lists, see who's still sending them out, and see if you can now get them to you before they hit the public eye in an email blast. But I know there's still some wholesalers out there that are finding good deals, and there are lots to what Steve was mentioning. There's a lot of buyers who aren't following through because of how tight funding has gotten because of COVID. So it ends up being like a really great COVID strategy, but it wasn't designed like that at the new year. And I've gotten myself two flips out of it. And I've got one coaching client a deal. And another coaching client just texted me before I hopped on this call saying that we were on our call last night and he was like, it's not working. And I was like, all right, well, let's actually break it down. Show me where it is in your calendar. And like, it wasn't. So we know consistency there. Like, we just started the calendar. It wasn't there. The conversation was pretty easy.
Yeah.
And the next layer to that was like, well, how many people are you contacting? If it's 5, what's it going to look like if it's 10, 20? So we were going to go down this bunny trail. We stopped right at the calendar. So he got a nice kick in the butt, and shout out to him, because he went ahead and executed us immediately. He texted me before our call and said, hey, I was doing my touches, you know, my calls, and he's like, I got a really good potential deal. It happened to be from somebody else that's should have been on my list that I totally forgot. So I'm happy because I'll be a part of the deal. That I can't wait to look at it. So I've gotten two myself, one for a coaching client. He's gotten one. So I would say for $0 in marketing, it's an excellent strategy.
Right. Right. And Brent, you know what? Something else that people can do out there, and Cav, maybe if you're looking for fix and flips, go to here's a simple free strategy for people. Go to meetup.com. Look for the real estate investor groups in the area and just contact the admin. Oftentimes the people that run these meetup groups, they're by nature, they're leaders. They have a following, they have an audience. Sometimes they're coaches, they have access to deals, or they have their own deals. Stand on the shoulder of giants is a saying that I forgot who said, but build relationships with people that run groups. I know somebody that, and Steve, I think this was a part of a mastermind that you were, you and I, remember when Brandon recommended, which I thought was a great idea, is contact the admins of Facebook groups and offer to buy the Facebook group for like $250-$500. Now you've basically inherited an entire audience that you can start to like build relationship with, market to, et cetera. So there's so many strategies like that that people can leverage.
So that's really thinking outside the box. So,
yeah,
Brent and I,
Facebook group.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I just want to add one more thing. Local Facebook groups. Like, if you search Maryland Investor Network in Maryland here, we have a Facebook group that's just getting blasted. Wholesalers are all over there sending out potential deals. So nice little.
Yeah. And George wants everybody to know that he takes pride in his grays, and George has his grays. So George is funny, man.
I was going to change directions if it's all right with you guys, because you brought something up, Brenton. You brought something up about how you called your student out and you provide some accountability for him. And it was just, hey, look, show me your calendar. Show me where you have made the effort, right? So that brings me to you, Brenton, and your coaching skills, which you are just a natural coach. which actually makes you that much more valuable within a mastermind such as Ascend. So for the other members of the group, and even for Alex and myself, to have somebody like you shoulder to shoulder with us in that room privately, where everything is confidential and we're really getting into some deep stuff, to have somebody with the ability to ask the questions and to cut through all the crap and get right to the core of the issue, like you are able to do, is an extreme value add for the room. And I think all three of us can agree. Maybe you would humbly agree with that, but I will sing your praises out loud. But I'm curious about the power of asking questions. That has just had such a profound effect on my life, my ability to coach others, my ability to learn and just be naturally curious. You seem to have that same trait. And I'd love to kind of know where you came up with your ability to ask such great questions and to just really strip everything away and get to the core of the issues.
Thank you for pointing that out. I'm very much still on this journey of coaching. However, yes, I really enjoy it. And I would say my questions kind of derive from two different places. Place number one is I always have a tab or two open, and I think you do this as well, Steve, where I have a list of top coaching questions. So whether mm-hmm. it's on Google or it's one that you've created, having that top of mind, front and center, and you're just scanning that saying, okay, where in here can I apply an excellent question so that I don't entrepreneurially have to be on it every second? Because to me, if I'm not prepared for them, then I increase the chances of letting them down on drilling deep. So I'm not perfect, but I definitely have my cheat sheet, no doubt. And then number two is I like to often ask the question of what I would like to be asked if I was in that situation. So like I say to myself, like, what would expose me right now? And if somebody said, show me your calendar, like I'd be like, you got me. If somebody says, if you're like, I submitted X amount of offers this week. Okay, show me. Either you have a tracking sheet or you can pull up your inbox right now. We can screen share on Zoom. Show me where you submitted these offers. So for those reasons, it's like the trust then verify system. Okay, I trust mm-hmm. you, but let's verify that. And I want to see it. So I'll ask questions that otherwise I know, like if they ask me this, like sometimes like I'll be on a call with you and I'm like, if he asked me this question right now, I'd be toast. And then for that reason, I should ask myself that question if you don't.
Right.
But you know, what's interesting, Brenton, is that level of accountability forces you to hold yourself accountable.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause they asked me, they're like, Brenton, show me your system for contacting these wholesalers every week. And I'm like, all right, good thing I attempt to practice what I preach, because I, at least for that, I have that system broken down. And I did. I mean, I screenshotted them and I'm like, I use Asana, which is free. Here's the calendar I use. You check them off and it auto-populates it to the next week. And then my assistant Brent has the training video on how to do that. So we sent that out to them. And then I also showed them on my calendar, I have a time block for my construction updates and all a list of all my properties. So I make sure I get an update on all my properties every single Monday morning. So those are some few little systems that I tell them to do or recommend that they do that I have. Yeah, you're right. I have to make sure I do it too.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, Brenton, Steve, I think we plan on going for about another 10 minutes or so. And there's a few things we're not going to be able to get too deep into it, but I do want to cover, because that's what we told people we were going to talk about as well. What importance has raising capital, having access to private money? What impact has that had on your business? And how are you going about raising capital these days?
Sure. I like to break it down in a pretty systematic manner. So step one would be to create a list of 50 individuals who either might have investments themselves or money on the sidelines, equity. Comes through four different vehicles. Typically it's equity in your house, money on the sidelines. So like savings, money in savings. You're looking for somebody who has money in retirement and somebody who's like actively investing. Maybe it's stock market. So I've kind of narrowed it down. You're looking for a list of 50 people who might have one of those four vehicles going, or might know somebody else who does. Mm-hmm. So it might be like an influencer. It might be a friend who has like a more quote unquote financially wealthy family. And you're like, okay, well, my friend doesn't have it. He might know people. So step one mm-hmm. is create that list. At least start at 50 as like a benchmark. Clearly, if that's not getting it done, you got to do more. And if somebody's having trouble getting that 50, I will have them break into categories. Okay, now let's think of all your friends. Let's think of all your family. Let's think about all your business partners or colleagues if you have a full-time job. Let's think of all of your church, your friend, or your sports teams, like whatever. So you can break in categories to help you. And then next, after you have that list, it's simply having the conversation with those individuals of, hey, I just want to have a conversation about what's going on in your world, your investments, your money in the house, and your equity, or your money on the sidelines, and if you're looking to get into investing, and just figure out like what they're looking to do, because a lot of people are looking to diversify from the stock market. Mm-hmm. A lot of people are looking to put money off of the sidelines. They just don't know where to start. So like I had a great tactical story, which will put a bow on this, is I had one of my best friends lived at home with his parents, and he's in his late 20s. And right then and there, I should have probably realized he probably has cash, but I didn't really. And I was asking him, who does he know? Because he's just one of my best friends. I'm like, who do you know? He goes, I actually have a couple $100,000 sitting in my savings account. Mm-hmm. And I was like, holy, like, great for you. I was like, what are you doing with that money? He goes, I don't know. He's like, I work at the government. I save my money. I don't know anything about investing. I don't even know where to go. Mm-hmm. And that ended up being money that I've recycled for years now and have grown that for him. So having a simple conversation of, okay, well, what type of returns are you currently getting? What would it look like if I was able to give you more? And then you get them to sort of verbally agree on terms. Okay, 10% interest rate annualized. And then I tell them, well, when I have a deal, I'll reach out to you. Uh-huh. And I'll see if the timing's right for both of us. So you're not actually pulling the money in. You're just getting people on the sidelines. And now they become your accountability because you're sitting there thinking, or they might be having conversations with you like, hey, Brenton, when you're going to get your next one? And you're like, man, I really need to step up the lead gen because they're expecting me to get something.
Yep.
So that's kind of like a step-by-step. And I think that's anybody can do that.
Yeah. That's awesome. No, I appreciate you breaking it down like that too, because it's super easy to understand and to really implement. And Steve, you know, you and I have talked about this in the past. I think you do a very good job of this as well. And shout out to Tim Brotz. He does the same thing. Whenever you borrow money from a private money lender, always over deliver, you know? And so like, if you pay them off early or whatever, and they got X percent return, talk about that transaction on social media in the form of like a post, in the form of a case study. And I think just by sharing your story and sharing the fact that, hey, you know, you don't have to say who the lender was, but just the fact sharing the deal, it's going to pique people's interest. And you can, I know personally, Tim, he's raised a lot of money just educating people and entertaining them through his posts, talking about actual deals, but he's not even really going out and asking for money. So you can really leverage social media and the power of storytelling and just case studies that can really multiply your private money lender access. So a couple of the things, Steve, do you have any questions for Brenton before I move on?
I mean, I've got a lot of little things that we can kind of do a speed round at the end, but I want to make sure that we get all of our content covered and we get any questions answered for him.
Okay. Perfect. And I definitely want you to fire away on that speed round. Brenton, you've been in business now 7-8 years. You've had your highs, you've had your lows, as we all have. What have been your biggest quote unquote failures, i.e. lessons learned?
Well, they continue to get larger.
Okay. Talk to me.
I would say the one that clearly stands out, I mean, you guys know the story pretty intimately, that I got in business with one of my best friends, and we were each flipping houses alone. We're like, oh, well, we can do more volume together because if you can find a deal and I find the money, we'll pair it together and we'll split it. So instead of passing on deals, we'll be able to use both of our resources, time, money, contractors, and just get them done. And we did one really well. Then after that, it got really bad, got murky. And getting in business with the best friend who would have been the best man at my wedding. Mm-hmm. And that money ended up disappearing, and it put me out of the business, in the sense of like, I had to like pause my own investments to make sure that these lenders are getting paid back, that I'm not taking on more debt. And I mean, we're talking to the tune of a couple $100,000, and it really stretched me in a lot of ways, So I would say that is probably the highest level overview and quickest I've ever gone through that story. That is exactly what happened in a nutshell. So that's from getting in business with the wrong person and having too much trust and not doing the trust verify system, especially when there's money involved and other people's money. Okay. And then, I mean, I have plenty of mistakes I've made on properties and all that good stuff. I still make them.
Got it. So to recap if you could kind of rewind the clock, mm-hmm. you probably wouldn't have gotten into business with your best friend. And if you would have, you would have had things just more checks and balances. It sounds like you kind of trusted, but you didn't really verify.
Right. Yeah. I would have been at the properties when the agreement was he's to handle that construction and I didn't realize they weren't getting done. And a lot of that. And I actually think that the even bigger lesson there learned is the whole addition by subtraction. Uh-huh. I didn't need to get into the partnership. I mean, it was just a handful of deals and man, did it sink my ship for a while there. So I simply was just in this hunger, shiny object mode where it's like, oh, if I can do two or three more and I can do this with this person and this with that person and just adding on stuff that had an extreme law of diminishing returns. And that is where I think the even bigger lesson there is just not living a simplified life that is closer to profitability.
Okay. Thank you for really opening up on that.
So much wisdom.
Hey, Steve, last question before I turn it over to you. And we can kind of go pretty quick on this one, but it was the headline of this particular Facebook Live and podcast. You know, you're 27 years old, you're going to do a bunch of flips this year, and you've amassed 40 rental units. Talk about what the journey's been like for you to start to accumulate wealth by holding and not just burning and churning.
So on the rental side, I guess we should rename this to addition by subtraction. Because on the rental side, I mean, I grew really quick. My partner and I, when we bought 11 unit portfolios, our first one, and we had three units and two single family, and it was this owner that just wanted to sell everything. So we bought that, not knowing what we were doing, and figured it out as we went. Then we added in more, and then added more. Then we bought an 18 unit portfolio, and while there's a lot of good properties in there, there's also bad ones. And by at least, I mean, some people might look at that and be like, oh, that's small compared to what we do. But for us, that was fairly big. So I know for a fact that if we were going a little bit slower, a little bit more strategic, then we probably wouldn't have bought some of the ones we did. We wouldn't get caught up in all the hype and the capital and all that stuff. So now it's how do we get back to profitability and simpler life? And rather than having this amount of headaches, let's have this amount of having this amount of headaches and this much profit. Let's have this amount of headaches and this much profit. So, I mean, now we're selling off the ones, taking money off the table, ones that we know aren't going to be great for us long term. And we're now actually going the opposite direction. We're scaling back. We're selling. We're becoming a little bit more lean and profitable because we went uber crazy and had just a lot of interest in loans and stuff like that. Yep. So I can tell you that I don't think bigger is always better. So if you're looking at the 40 and you're like, wow, that's a lot. Even though some of you might be looking at that and saying that's not that much. I think it's too many for me and what my goals are. So like, I know now I'm looking at more of like your model, Steve, where it's have less rentals, less headaches, but own them more free and clear and have access to your own cash. And I am now headed that direction. But certainly learned a lot during there. So happy to answer any questions. If anybody getting started, you can just message me on Facebook or
Twitter,
Instagram.
Yeah. Sure. Well, with that, I want to just let folks on the broadcast know that now is starting in your questions for Brenton. If you want to go ahead and submit a Q&A, just go ahead and type in the comment section wherever you're watching this. And we'd love to go ahead and ask him some of your questions. Brenton, I want to get your take on the current market, where we stand right now, globally versus, and when I say that, I mean stock market versus real estate market versus basically how that has impacted perhaps your investing strategy moving forward. Maybe I know you can't really reveal to everything that you share with your students because that's a private program that you run there, but maybe some high level advice or some tips or some ways that you are advising your students right now, and maybe just some of the high level stuff that you've heard from being a part of Ascend or other masterminds out there and how that's dictated your decisions moving forward next 6 to 12 months.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm an open book, happy to share everything. I want to start by saying I'm just like everybody else. I have no idea what the future holds. So there's my disclosure up front. So now that disclosure's out of the way, that we have no idea and cannot predict it, and none of you can, unfortunately. Even those of you with strong opinions, not you specifically, those out in the world. I will then further to say we're just buttoning up the right way of going about business. So what I mean by that is we are watching our margins and staying firm. So if you, so the 70% rule is a great example of if we like to make sure that we're getting 15% of the ARV, the after repair value. So after it's going to sell, say it's $200,000 of resale value, then we want 15% of that in profit in case the market falls 15%. And I got that, I think, from you, Steve, as far as like a really hard, firm line. Cause I'm the type of person who's like, you know, if it's 10%, I'll be fine. So being way more firm and cautious and careful and conservative and really holding firm on the marginal deals. So like there's a couple marginal deals that I and my coaching clients would have taken, but not. And I'm not looking to do that many flips. I mean, it says 20, so that's because I have a lot of flips with my coaching students. I mean, I'll probably flip 6 to 8 this year myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, even then, that might be like more than I really want. That's 2, 3, or 4 at once, given where they are in the cycle. Mm-hmm. So I don't want to hold too much at once. And I want to be really conservative and careful in the profit margins. We want on a $200,000 resale, we want 30K in profit because that's 15% of ARV. So in case the market drops 15%, we still covered. We're being more cautious about our construction, our timelines, velocity of cash, getting in and out of deals. We're preferring smaller deals over bigger deals. Mm-hmm. And we're just being careful, even though the stock market and a lot of other indicators have shown that the economy is just rocking and rolling. We're taking that for a grain of salt and we're just being careful. And that's why I mean, it's a great time to get started. It's a horrible time to get started. It's a great time to get started. Horrible because deals are really tough to find and there's low inventory. A great time because if you learn now and you're getting your first deal under your belt, I mean, you're not holding multiple deals. If you remain conservative, you're not going to get wiped out if the economy crashes. I mean, you're holding one deal and you had bought it at a good margin because you held firm all year to buy that one good deal. I mean, what better time to learn than now? Because when the market does get easier, you're going to clean up.
Yeah.
Well, I do recommend like getting started in today's market, as crazy as it sounds.
Yeah. I was listening to a podcast the other day. It was a commercial real estate investing podcast, but I love the sentiment nonetheless. He says he gets a lot of people coming to him asking, say, hey, is now a good time to get started? And he said, well, it depends on how good the deal you buy is. If you buy for the right price, now's a great time to get started. When the economy is super hot, is it time to get started? Well, if you buy for the right price and it's a great time to get started, the economy is crap. Is now a good time to get started? Well, if you buy for the right price and it's a great time to get started. So anytime's a good time to get started as long as you're buying for the right price. So that's in line with what you're saying there. That's great. Alex, do you want to handle the Q&A? They're starting to come in here.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Rich, good stuff. Thank you, Rich. Appreciate you, brother. Let me see here. I wish I knew who was asking this. Steve, I don't know if maybe you could check on the screen.
I'll check and see if I can see.
Okay, just to give them, you know, just to shout them out.
That's Latasha Harris. Harris.
Actually, I'm going to get to Latasha. Okay, so she asked both questions?
She said, would you suggest the new investor use equity in their primary residence to buy their first rental property?
So I'll circle question I was showing on the screen. We'll go to Latasha's question.
Okay.
But yeah, Brent, you want to go ahead and take this one?
All right. Would you suggest a new investor use equity in their primary residence to buy their first rental property? All right. It's a great question because you're talking about your resources. So that's where I'm challenged because like Latasha, since I don't know you and how much cash you have in the bank and how much equity you have in your house and what type of how good the rental property is that you would be buying, it's super challenging to answer it specifically for you. And now that disclosure is out of the way, if it was me, I would want to just watch how I'm leveraged. So like I personally would not want to be leveraged more than 70% of value right now. I mean, take it for a grain of salt. But for me, like even in a personal residence, like just watching that, at least definitely no more than 70% LTV. I'm seeing a lot of like even like my banking relationships where I'm getting my refis, they're now coming down to 70, 65% LTV. So staying in line with that, if you have enough equity in your house to still stay underneath 70% LTV, the value of your house times 70% and whatever you owe, I would certainly consider using some of that money to fund your investments. And it would just have to be a really great rental property, because like we mentioned before, we don't know what the future holds. And as long as it fits your mold for criteria, then yeah, sure. If you don't have that much equity in your house and it's a borderline rental or it's not that great of a rental, then probably not. I wouldn't personally.
Yeah. I'll piggyback on that too, Brenton. Great answer. Latasha, I would use equity in my primary residence to buy chunks of cash, to do investments that make chunks of cash, i.e. either buy, fix and sell, or buy and immediately resell, like a wholesale or a quick wholesale. I would generate that cash and then, and only then, start to buy your first rental property. I don't want to say I made a mistake, but I started out just buying rental property, and I wish that I would have stayed with plan A, which was to invest in chunks of cash type of investing. So real estate merchandising versus real estate investing activities. And I probably would have grown that much faster. So that's my quick piece of advice for you there.
Yeah. Great question, Latasha. So let me fire this one. I don't know who's asking.
I don't know who that is, Al.
Okay, no worries. I don't see it. Brent, I'll read it for you, man. What's your ideal time to complete a flip project with, and you stay away from certain area? I'm not following the last part of it, but maybe you can grab it.
Yeah, I got it.
Okay.
All right. So my ideal time frame to complete a flip is ASAP. Velocity of capital is important. So if I can keep my construction under 12 weeks, then it's a win for me. We're having some issues right now with the permitting process, because getting the inspectors out there, they're understaffed and there's a ton of backlog. So we're definitely having some issues there. So I have to factor that in now, like COVID timelines are different now because of that. However, I would love to stay under 3 months construction. So if I can buy it, get in and out in 3 months and get it listed right after that, then I'm super happy. I would say my average flip probably takes 6 months to go from start to completely finished and sold, meaning we've already hit the market, we've fielded offers, we've let them have their time to buy it. And then as far as staying away from certain ARVs, if you're looking for profit margin of 15% of the ARV or more, and those are pretty hard to find. I mean, at least me personally, I have trouble finding them. And I still am, don't tell Steve or Alex, but I still am pulling the trigger on like 12, 13% deals if I know that I can get in and out quick.
Yeah.
And I know I can have a
show. I am too. I just contracted one and I'm buying it next week.
All right. I'm not on a pedestal saying I'm perfect here. However, yeah, if you are looking at that 15% of ARV for profit margins, the higher the ARV, the more difficult it is to hit your goal. And we're not pulling the trigger anything under 25K on profit anyways, mm-hmm. 25 or 30, if it's a super small deal, quick and easy. So for those reasons, I don't find myself out of the first time home buyer market for ARV, especially right now. I just think that's going to get hit the hardest. And for our market here, then that means I don't like projects that are going to resell for more than like 350, 375.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay. By the way, we got one more question here. So if you guys watching, listening, if you have any questions, now's the time to ask. Just want to give some love back to David. Thanks for sharing, guys. Appreciate you, David. Nicole, thanks, good David. Info. Appreciate you. Facebook user, thank you, whoever you are.
Rich, hey, on my other account.
Yeah, right. So Marco, great content question. When you partner up with private investors, do you aim to have 50% stake of the company or more?
When I'm partnering up with a private investor, what I'm looking to do is I'm looking to keep their investment completely passive. And by doing so, I have 100% of control and decisions and liability on the asset that we're working on. What they're doing is they're just passively lending capital. So what that looks like is, let's use a 12% interest rate as an example. They loan $100,000, 12%. I pay them $1,000 on the first of every single month as passive income, and it's interest only, no equity, and I deal with all the headaches, I deal with all the work, and the take on the responsible for the liability. And then at the end of the projects, they're getting passive income every month on the first of every month. And then at the end of the project, they'll get their money back. So they earn interest. And that's the type of partnership that I do. And a lot of people want equity. If you have done really well at what you do in life and that's afforded you the ability to have your extra capital, then I would stay focused on that and let us put your money to work to make you even more.
Steve, man, any parting words? And we'll let kind of, well, actually, before you go, Steve, Brenton, really appreciate the time, man. You're a rock star. Yeah, actually, Marco's got one quick follow-up. Let's try to sneak it in here before the hour mark. So yep. Is Lending Space, you're not partnering up, actually?
Well, it's a strategic partnership where it's passive income for them. So no, I'm not like equity partnering up, but we are business partners in the sense of they loan me money. I put that money to work. 100% of I have ownership and I give them passive income. All right, he says, thanks. So hope that answers you, Marco. I don't know what side of the table you are there. If you have any further questions, you let me know.
Yep. Joanne too. Appreciate the love, brother. Good to have you on the broadcast here. Brent, dude, it's absolute pleasure, man, to watch your growth. You know, you and Steve were working together prior to Ascend, and to have you a part of Ascend for the last year and to just watch your growth. And to Steve's point, it's like having another coach in the room with you. Just, you know, Brenton is a perfect example of just the community of entrepreneurs that we have within Ascend. And this is going to be kind of cheesy and crazy, man. Sometimes I pinch myself that we get to work with people like you. That's how it feels. And I know Steve feels the same way. So awesome. Just having you in the community and love what you're doing, man. Love your growth. You're super grounded at your age, a lot more grounded than I was at 27. So just keep doing what you're doing. You're going to make mistakes just like Steve and I are, and you learn from them and you keep going. Right. So
yeah, man.
Awesome, man. Yeah. Kind of, any parting words on your end?
Yeah, man, absolutely. I echo everything you said about Brenton. Brenton, you know, I love working with you, man. Having you in Ascend, bring a ton of value. Final question for you. I have a list of rapid fire questions. Unfortunately, we won't be able to get to all of them. Some fun ones in there too, but I'll ask you one that I think might benefit others. Best book you've read so far in 2020?
I immediately looked down at my phone and go back to my Audible. I'll tell you what really stands out to me is,
Audible's cheating. Go ahead.
I do read books. I listen to more. Millionaire Next Door was a great one to go back and to listen to because, man, does that really put things in perspective for your money? It's not what it sounds. It's not about becoming a millionaire. It's excellent. I guess we're almost out of time. I can answer five. Give me
no, more. Steve, go, man. Go.
Let me give you a crazy one here. Brenton, ready? Rapid fire. First thing that comes to mind. What's your favorite word?
Well, orange came to mind. I don't know why. It's definitely not my favorite word.
You have to realize something just happened. You mouthed it, and I don't know if it was my internet connection or your internet connection, but when you said the word orange, it looked like you said horse shit.
Well, that
I look at if I go like this, or does it not look like the same word? I mean, it's very similar, right?
Watermelon. It looks like I love you.
Right.
Anyway, I'm trying to find the emoji, but I can't seem to find it. So you're
interesting. When I was super young, really, really young, I don't know, elementary school, I learned the word conflagration, and I'm never able to use it. It means large destructive fire, but I used to go around and like quiz people.
Right.
So, that has been a word I've carried with. So you gave me an excuse to use it. I'm going to use it. Conflagration. It wasn't the first that came to mind. Orange was. I don't know why. But I would, for my parting words, I just want to say thank you guys. Thank you for having me. Thank you for letting me be in Ascend. There are many private things that I cannot share, but I wish I could, that would outline your value as a coach to me on strategic moves we've made in my life, personally and professionally. And, you know, the ROI is infinite in that sense. So, you know, I appreciate you guys. Thank you.
Cool, man. Likewise, awesome. Brenton. Thank you so much, man.
Yeah, thank you, brother. And for everybody who took the time to watch us live and anybody who takes the time to listen to this in the future, whether on the Flip Empire Show, or anywhere else, even on Facebook. We greatly, greatly appreciate the time. We do this for you guys. Yes, we do enjoy it, but it's to try to help you however we can through our experiences. So, Cav, you know, I always appreciate you, my friend.
Yeah, man.
Always likewise, a pleasure getting on here with you. And Brenton, I will see you in about a month in sunny Miami, my man. So get ready to work on that 10.
That's right.
All right, guys. Have a great
one. All right, guys. Take care. All righty. Bye-bye.
That's all for this episode of the Flip Empire Show. But we have you covered with even more expertise and resources on our website. Text EMPIRE to 67076 or head over to flipempire.com to join the newsletter and gain free instant access to our video module training course called 5 Ways to Scale Your Real Estate Wholesaling Business to 6 Figures in 6 Months or Less. For more interviews, strategies, and insights for the smart real estate investor, we'll catch you next time here on the Flip Empire Show.